5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
When I had come down this hill, I had seen this creature cross the road. It would have ripped my locked door from my truck, extracted me from my vehicle, and there wouldn't have been a damn thing I could have done about it.
This thing, I got to notice its eyes. Its eyes was real, real evil, real sinister looking. You know, the look it was giving me.
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
Welcome to Sasquatch Chronicles, a place where people share their encounters. Let's start the show.
Well, I want to apologize to everyone for Thursday night show Will and I had planned. It was nice seeing you too, by the way, Will. I was down there in California.
Yeah, it was really nice. Great to see both of you too.
No, but we went to do the show, and I wish I had a better explanation for everyone out there, but Blog Talk just crashed on us, and then I thought, well, let's go and post it on the website. I've never seen Blog Talk crash like this, so let's go post something to the website, SasquatchChronicles.com, so people know what happened. And then the website went down, which was odd, really odd. It's back up. It wasn't down very long.
It was coincidental, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was real coincidental. But I wanted to, you know, do the show that we promised last Thursday. And I would have done it last night, but I was driving back. And, you know, so it was kind of, it's nice to do the show. I know we got some callers in the queue. I got a lot of questions I want to, from the website, ask people in our forum on SasquatchChronicles.com if they would post questions and we'd answer questions on the air. So we're going to try and get to a lot of that. We're going to try and get to your calls. Shannon's not with us tonight. She had a prior engagement, but we had someone call in who I thought we'd bring on as a third co-host here, Will. Mr. Kumbo Baker, how are you, sir?
I'm very well.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad that you called in. I'm happy to bring you on. We were just talking for the 100th show, bringing you back, but you're welcome anytime. I'm glad you called in. Thanks for being here.
All righty. Thought I could just hang on here and, you know, I don't want to hog the show up or anything like that by any means, but thought I could hang on if anybody wanted to shoot some questions or something. I could be glad to help answer.
Absolutely.
Well, I got to tell you, you're always one of my favorites, so glad to have you here.
Yeah, glad to be here. It's an honor.
Well, let's bring David on. David had a question, and then we'll all jump to you next, Joe, with your encounter. But I wanted to bring David on the air. David, you had a question for us?
I do indeed. First of all, good evening, Roll Tide from Alabama. But
War Eagle.
Oh. Oh, man. I had enjoyed my supper up until that point. And, I'm a little in the dark as to the different types of Sasquatches, and so maybe just a brief breakdown of that, if possible, and what would be the most likely type we would encounter here in Alabama.
There's basically two major groupings, and for the lack of any real terminology, species-wise, we'll just call it group A and group B. Group A has two subspecies, and Group B has two subspecies. So overall, there are four different kinds. The first grouping are, we are like the Patterson type, the type 1 and type 4s. And in Group B, we have the type 2s and type 3s, the ones with the canines, and that will, you know, use all fours, things like that. And Kumbo could probably answer this better than me, but my guess from what I, from the reports, in your part of the country, it's probably more the type 2s that are prevalent.
You run into the, to the, what I call the type 2s, which are, look more like the Neanderthal. They, if you look in the book, Them and Us, you run into more of them, that type. The nose is different, and they don't have the vertical slit pupils, and they certainly don't carry spears. But the body form and everything, and the shape of the head, and the posture and all that is about right in the Them and Us book. But you also have, in certain areas, you have the type 1s, which are the patty type, you know, like you see in the Patterson-Gimlin film. And they can live right close to each other. And I don't know if they interbreed or not, but I figured if they did, they would probably have already wiped each other, the type distinctiveness out. So I think that they sort of keep the two different types keep to themselves. My theory, you know, I'm just basing that on, you know, the fact that I grew up on a farm and, you know, around breeding dogs, breeding cattle and hogs and such as that. And, you know, when you start mixing breeds and types and stuff, you get a meld of the two. Well, these two types are still separate, definite types. And, now on our farm, we typically have the type one. Right down the road a little piece, you find the type 2s. Right over in northeastern Mississippi in Itawamba County, I can take you to a place, and if we're lucky enough, we can see some type 1s. And then literally 2 or 3 miles away as a crow flies, there are type 2s. And then there's also what I call a type 3, which is the sort of the wood-looking type, or the beast of LBL, or the beast of seven shoots type, to have the canine
what
type.
What they call the dog man.
Yeah, the dog man, exactly. And then some people have what they call a type four, which I've never seen one, but I know some good researchers and stuff that claim that, you know, that they know somewhat about them, and that's the what people commonly refer to as the little people. Like I said, I've never researched them, never seen one, never seen evidence of one. But
let me give a little clarification on that. Our friend, yeah, Mr. Black, said the type 4s are proportionally closer to human. Now, they're not the same size as humans. They're larger. But generally, you know, no hair on the face, hair on the rest of the body. But unlike the other types that have, you know, the longer forearms, shorter shins, things like that, these guys are a little more closely proportioned to humans.
Would they be the smaller of the four as well?
They,
yes.
Yeah.
I believe, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right, Kumbo.
Then in other parts of the country, and, you know, we run into some that people classify as a type 5, which is sort of your things like your Nelusa Filea, the Skinwalkers, you know, Deer Woman, things like that, things that are beings that are, you know, sacred to the Native Americans and not spoken of very much. Quite a bit of evidence of them, and I've been in areas where they or supposed to exist, but again, I don't know a lot about them myself.
I've seen a lot of I've encountered a lot of beer women, but it's usually at a gig.
Yeah.
Where's one of those when you want one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that was pretty much my question, and that's good info about the type 4. That actually intrigues me and maybe explain some things.
Well, we appreciate you calling in, David.
Certainly. Have a good evening, Gal.
Yeah, I know Tracy, the last episode 75, he was the last one that called in, and I need to pass along his information to you, Kumbo. He was wanting to talk to you. I think his encounter happened out there in Alabama, didn't it, Will?
Yes, it did.
Yeah, and I sent him Kumbo's information.
Okay.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Good. What were you going to say, Kumbo?
It happened in an area that I'm very familiar with, just, you know, right down the road from, you know, where I grew up and very close to where I lived up until 2002. So I'm very familiar with the area.
You heard the whole encounter?
Yes. Yes. I went back and when I, someone told me about it and I went and listened to the episode this afternoon, as a matter of fact.
What's your take, Kumbo, on what was going on there?
You know, they love to move around on rainy nights and stuff. It, you know, it provides a lot of cover for them and things. And I believe they just happened to be out, you know, skulking around, maybe hunting, you know, scrounging for food, whatever. You know, raiding gardens that time of year. There's a lot in the, you know, July and August. There's a lot of vegetables, a lot of fruit, and you know, things to be gleaned, and they were probably out gleaning groceries and either saw the truck pull or came upon it after it pulled over and thought it was, you know, rather interesting, you know, what was going on. And so probably the braver of the group, which is, sounds to me like from the description, probably the alpha, and it just about the right proportions for a type 2 alpha out of that area up there. Also, where he broke down was very, very close, probably less than 2 miles, certainly less than 3 miles as the crow flies from Woodall Mountain, which there are a tremendous amount of sightings from that area. That happens to be the highest point in Mississippi. But anyway, he had the door open. He was rummaging around in there, and you know, the big boy came up there just checking things out. And when the when he, you know, started to take a whiz out the side door there, probably, you know, that's a sign of disrespect. That's one of the ways that we have provoked them in the past, is by, you know, peeing on things that, you know, some of their formations and structures and stuff, and to see what kind of reaction we get. Typically, the reaction is not a good one. You know, they get quite aggravated, and that's probably, you know, why it reacted the way it did. And now, I don't think it was planning on eating him or killing him or anything like that, because if it was, he would have never seen it coming. He would have never had the opportunity to see it like he did. Probably it stuck its head in there just to see if it might grab, you know, they're opportunists. See if there was something it could grab and run with, that it could have swiped or taken or whatever. Or just to check the guy out, you know, to see him closer. I don't think it was intending to hurt him, or, you know, or certainly not kill him and eat him. But it was definitely going to let him know that it didn't appreciate what he had done. The scream that he described is the scream that I have heard on a number of occasions. You know, when they're pissed. When they're pissed at you, when you've done something to make them mad, the noise, the whoop that he made when he realized that Tracy had a handgun, that is a that noise is what Bear and I refer to as well, we have a name for that type of call, and that's a get the hell out of Dodge call is what that is. And yeah, that's a warning call. And if the alpha female does it, it calls all the little ones to her, and she leads the way out of there. If it's one of the males that do it, that means, you know, everybody, open up a large can of gone, go, get, you know, danger. And I have recordings of that call. And I've heard it a number of times. And it's always given when we have somehow surprised them or, you know, slipped in there on them and they didn't realize it or, you know, things like that, you know, when they got to get out of there quickly.
There was a question in the chat room. I just saw it about peeing as being a sign of disrespect. And
that is, yes.
And there was a question to that as far as, you know, why is that disrespectful? But, you know, I guess I can liken it to, and I'm not liking Sasquatch to dogs, but dogs will do the same thing. My girlfriend's nephew comes over with his little tiny dog, and it's got to pee on every little thing my dog's peed on, which irritates the hell out of my dog.
It's a dominant sign.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a dominance thing when you do that. So I can see that pissing them off. I want to jump to Joe. Joe had an encounter he wanted to share. I saw it on Facebook. And then right after that, we'll bring Jennifer on. But I wanted to welcome Joe to the show.
Hi, Joe. How are you this evening?
I'm good. I'm nervous.
How long ago, no need to be nervous. How long ago did your event take place?
It was about 22 years ago.
And do you mind telling us what part of the country?
It's Central Kentucky.
Well, let's start out by just telling us what you were doing that day prior to the event and then walk us into things as they happened.
Well, it was just fixing to be deer season, so we were just setting our stands and everything like that. I owned 70 acres, 30 where my house was. I had about 3/8 of a mile of road frontage, and it sloped off, probably fell 70 to 80 feet in about maybe 200 yards, so it was pretty good, a little decline down a hill to a creek. And on the other side of the creek, did the same, but it rose a little steeper. And if you walk to the right side of my place, it was formed like a triangle. I had 40 acres that actually touched for about 50 feet on the back side of that, on the opposite side of that creek. So we had set our deer stands and everything up there, getting ready for opening day, and it was opening day, and go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. My speaker came on. Sorry.
Okay. So it was opening day. It was going to be in the morning. So I thought, well, I want to be in my deer stand before daylight. So I got up at about 5 o'clock, got ready to go. You know, everything was already packed. And I walked through my hay field. And it was probably maybe 1,000 yards or so. 1,000 feet. Down to where my properties joined, where that creek was, and went through the gate and across the creek. And you know, that was low grass, not making any noise, walking down through there. I don't remember if it was raining or it had rained, but everything was pretty wet and it was overcast. So by the time I got to that creek, I thought, man, I wished I'd have brought a flashlight because it was just pitch black. I mean, no moon, but, you know, I mean, I had been to my stand many times. I thought I'm gonna find my stand without any problem. So I crossed that creek, and the way this back property set, it was a big hill. Like I said, it was 40 acres. It was a big hill, and it had like a cleared horseshoe around the outer perimeter, and then the middle was probably 35 or so acres of woods. So I went down the creek and I entered the woods, and I went maybe 20, 25 feet in the woods. And I heard this, rah, rah. And I thought, man, that's a buck grunt. And I mean, this thing's like maybe 30, 35 feet from me up that hill. And I don't remember if I stopped or I glanced that way, but you know, it was a little grunt. Didn't really, you know, I'm holding a high-powered rifle, semi-auto high-powered rifle. So didn't really alarm me. And man, I'm getting nervous just talking about this. I went maybe 4 or 5 more steps. And from about 20 feet away, this thing goes, whoa! And I mean, just, I can't even describe, my vocabulary isn't good enough to describe the sound. I literally froze. I mean, I didn't take another step. I didn't look in that direction. I don't think I could have moved. And my first thought was, what the hell was that? I knew it wasn't an animal from Kentucky, I can tell you that. And
was
in 92,
like
it was It was like a roar. It really was. I listened to a couple of your shows, and you said a lion's roar, and it was very similar to that, but it was just, this thing had, to not sound stupid, it kind of had like sound waves in it that I could feel. And, I mean, I've been a firefighter paramedic for 30 years, and I work in emergency situations all the time, and this thing just stopped me. And hang on a minute, let me take a breath.
While you're doing that,
so anyway,
you could it was sort of like sort of the sensation that you get when you're standing on the curb and a band comes by, you know, marching band, and you're near the tubas and the drums and all that. It vibrates you.
Yeah, you could feel it. You could feel it.
Yeah.
I mean it almost felt like it just went through me. I mean, I didn't even look that direction. It scared me so much. It's 22 years ago, and it still. Just wears me out. So anyway,
okay, so
I'm standing
next?
There. I've got this gun. My mind's moving a million miles an hour, and I'm thinking, if I turn that direction, this thing's going to kill me. I mean, I really thought they were close enough to reach out and hit me or pounce on me. I really didn't know what it was. You know, there was no internet or anything back there. I didn't know anything about Bigfoot. I'd seen the Legend of Boggy Creek 20 years earlier, but I didn't know they made noise, you know. So my mind's just racing, thinking, what could this possibly be? But I mean, I can tell that this thing, just because of its lung capacity and its noise, it was huge. So I'm standing there, thinking this couldn't get any worse. I'm standing there. I'm not moving a muscle. I'm thinking, don't point the gun at it. You know, I've got my hands on my gun pretty tight, but you know, I'm just standing there real still, and it's off about 90 degrees to my left. Like I said, I didn't even look over there. Mm-hmm. And I guess maybe 2 minutes go by, and it is just, you could have heard something. You could have heard a pin drop, not a sound anywhere.
Yeah.
And then about 25 feet to this thing's right, to my right, I heard a, whoa, it was two of them. And then I thought, you know, I thought, what the heck, you know, what am I going to do here? I just mentally just shut down. And, I mean, if these things wanted to hurt me, I couldn't see them, you know, so I stood there it seemed like about 10 minutes, and it was several minutes. I stood there. I didn't move a muscle, no sound, no more grunts, no more growls, no more locomotive train whistle growl things. And I'm thinking, you know, they could have already, if their intention was to jump on me, they would have jumped on me. And I'm thinking, this is like no animal I've ever seen, because if it was a buck in the rut, it either would have come at me or it would have took off, but it wouldn't just stand still with a predator. You know what I'm saying? Animals don't just stand there and look at you. So I knew I didn't hear it walk off. It made no noise whatsoever. So I decided I got to do something. So I real easily, I took about a half a step forward real slow. Never looked that direction, never pointed my gun that direction. Nothing happened. So I took another half step, and I mean, this is over several seconds. I'm just very slowly trying to move kind of to the right of them. So anyway, long story. Well, it's going to be a long story. So anyway, over the course of several minutes, I get away from them, and I'm thinking, they're not going to hurt me, because they could have, you know, it was their world, their choice. I couldn't even see them. So I'm thinking, now I'm past them. I can't go back to the house. And all I can think of was, get in the stand. If I'm up in the air, I've got a vantage point. Get off the ground, get up in the stand. So I got in the stand and waited for daylight. Daylight came up, and I don't know how long I sat there before I left. But once I could see really well, got down, went home. And I didn't tell my wife about that for 20 years. But anyway, it was a couple of days went by. I wouldn't go back out at night anymore, you know, in the early morning. If it was daylight and I had my rifle, I wasn't afraid. I'd go back, because, you know, of course, like I said, I envisioned a lot of things, but that never crossed my mind that this was a Bigfoot. I was telling Wes. the way this land laid, you know, it all went down to a creek, sloped way down to a creek, and there was a ravine that off of that creek went up the hill where this happened, about maybe 100 yards or so. And I was back there just about two or three days later. I don't remember how long I waited before I went back out, but I was facing this creek. And over there where this happened, right on the edge of those woods, I saw this gray head. And it was a huge round, maybe 2 foot, you know, this was like 100, 125 yards away, but it was like a 2 foot round head. And it was deer colored. It was as gray as it could be. And I caught it out of the corner of my eye, and I turned that direction, and I saw it just a glimpse moving, but I couldn't see its body. And I'm thinking, what the hell is that? And I said, I know I didn't imagine that. And but anyway, so it got my curiosity so much, I climbed the fence, crossed the creek, and went over to look up that ravine. And I could see, you know, pretty well all around that ravine because it was right on the edge of the woods. And I'm thinking, I'm going to see a deer in here. I'll shoot this deer. So I walk up to the edge of that ravine, and it's got some down timber and stuff in it, but there's nothing in that ravine. And I'm thinking, where could this thing have went? There's just no place it could have gone that I wouldn't have seen it. Of course, now I know how fast those things move. And I would say by the time I crossed the gate, it was probably gone. But then a couple of days go by, and I'm at the house, and there's a lot of poachers in that area of the country. You know, people just come out and hunt on anybody's land. Well, I saw three guys right up there at the top of that ravine from the house. So I got in my truck, and I drove up there. I was going to run them off, tell them they couldn't hunt on my place. And on the way up the hill, I dropped the water tank out of the back of the truck. It was about a 250-gallon water tank. It was empty. It slid out of the back of the truck. So I stopped the truck. I was going to get out. I was probably two-thirds of the way up that ravine on the edge of the woods. If you'd walk 30 feet in there, that's where the incident happened. And I thought, well, let me walk up to the top of the hill first and see if those guys are, y'all run them off. So I walked up to the top of the hill. I was looking for those guys. And over to the right of me, about, I don't know, 70 feet or so, it's a big old down cedar. The thing was about maybe 30 feet tall, about 8 foot big around. And I saw something come up from out of that underneath that cedar real quick. And I wheeled around, pointed my gun at it, and it was a 10-point buck. And it starts taking off, and it runs out in front of the truck, and it's going to run around me, almost a 180-degree semicircle just around me. And when it came out of the woods, its back right leg was just broken in about 6 or 7 pieces. And it was just flopping. Oh. And so anyway, I said, well, you know, I don't want it to suffer, so I went ahead and shot it. And went ahead and cleaned it out and everything. And I was looking at its leg, and its leg was broken, 3 or 4 pieces, back right leg. And it looked like it had a big hole in its hip, like somebody had literally pulled that leg up and just ripped the hip out. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, of course, until several years later, when I started hearing all these Sasquatch stories and your all show has really basically paralleled my story for the sounds and the feelings and the things like that for a while. But, you know, we had my father had actually planted 5 acres of blackberries on the front 30 acres that we were growing. So looking back at this, I mean, I don't know how long they were there. We were fencing that next summer, and I knew we had coyotes. We had turkey and everything else. We had coyotes, but this was like middle of the day back there where this happened on that 40 acres. All of a sudden, it sounded like there were 30 coyotes, and they were tearing one of them up. And, you know, you just heard the whelps and yelps, and I mean, it literally sounded like 30 coyotes tearing into each other. Then all of a sudden, not a sound, dead quiet, and we heard this, and I mean, just a hair stood up on the back of your neck, total silence. And, you know, I don't know if that was coyotes killing an injured coyote or if that was this thing killing all those coyotes. But anyway, that's pretty much my story. And, you know, it was years before I finally made the association. This is what that had to be. There's nothing else that could generate that noise, generate that sound.
Did you ever hear anybody talk about seeing anything weird like that in that same area?
No, that was, of course, back then nobody really talked much about it. But they never really. And of course, I wasn't open about it either. Like I said, it was 20 years before I told some of my family, you know. So
yeah.
Not really something you'd talk about, and I wouldn't want them to know. I don't want them to know today because they, you know, I just don't want to put up with the ridicule, to be honest.
You don't want the hassle. Yeah, I hear you there.
We appreciate you coming on, Joe.
Okay, I sure appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much. Or did you have any questions for us or anything? I mean, I really do appreciate you coming on.
Not really, other than I can't think of any other animal it would be. We don't have bears in this area, and it was 10 times lower than a bear anyway. You know, a bear didn't make that noise. So I don't know what else it could have been. But I'll tell you what's really funny after listening to your all story is, you know that movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, when the aliens pass over you and all you could do is think of, what is that, devil's mound or whatever, and you're making it in potatoes and everything. That's kind of like these Sasquatch encounters. Once you actually get one of them, you just can't stop thinking about it. It doesn't matter if it's 20 years ago.
That's the people that never experienced this don't quite get, you know.
Well, my wife has heard this story, and she says she wants to see one. I said, no, you don't. She said, well, maybe from a distance. And I said, from a distance would be okay if we had that choice.
Thanks again, Joe.
Okay,
yeah,
thank you.
Appreciate it.
Will, I know King of, and he told me how to pronounce this, and I'm sure I'm going to get it wrong, but King of Leinster, I'm sure I pronounced that wrong, in our forum on SasquatchChronicles.com. He wants to know, Will, has there ever been any cases that you've researched that made you think twice about following up or investigating more, maybe through fear for your own safety, be it an aggressive Sasquatch behavior, or through sketchy characters involved?
Not so much, you know, if it was a good, solid encounter. I've never backed away from looking into one. Now, if it was a sketchy character, there was an old timer in Skamania County who I used to deal with, and mostly because he was the local Bigfoot guy, and another friend of mine put me together with him, and I thought, oh, okay, that's great to have somebody out here. But the guy never had any solid information, so whenever he would call, it was always a case of, well, geez, I don't know, you know. If I had time, I'd go look, and it was, you know, never really been any benefit. So, but as far as an encounter, I can't think of any that I ever shied away from. I think it's always, you know, if there's shady characters, I mean, and we could name off probably half a dozen of them that are currently in the media, you know, that make all sorts of claims. And those kind of people, if they said something, I don't think I'd believe them. I wouldn't follow up on something like that.
Well, let's move to Jennifer. Jennifer, you had a question and an encounter?
Yes, I did. My question is that earlier in one of your episodes, you were talking about the knocking and how one would be behind the deer and it would kind of run it to one down trail a little bit. Have you ever heard of any encounters where they've tried to do that to a person instead of just luring them out? Because it seems to be there's a lot of luring going on in all the encounters.
You mean like they're trying to drive people into a certain area?
Yeah, like drive them into another Sasquatch that ambushes them. Like they're focused on the one behind them. And they're trying to get the, you know, away from the one behind them to only end up, you know, next to one in front of them that they didn't know was there.
Yeah, there has been a few I can think of. I can, not necessarily like driving type behavior. I know we had one gentleman on the show. I wish I could remember which show it was. But as he was walking down this trail, he actually saw a Sasquatch and it saw him. And it would stop and it would turn back and look at him. And then it would take a few more steps, stop and turn back and look at him, take a few more steps. And as he started walking towards it, trying to figure out what the heck is this thing, he's walking towards it and it's not really trying to get away. It would stop, look back. And so he had noticed up on the hill, there was one that darted behind a tree right next to the trail. And he said he felt like he was being put into an ambush. So, I mean, we have heard of those type of encounters where people say, I felt like I was being ambushed.
I interviewed a hunter once with a very almost an identical situation. So it does occasionally happen.
And I guess as for my encounter, my husband and I, we go out logging roads about 20 minutes in. And we've been going there since 2005 about. And
what part of the country?
Oregon.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of over by the coast.
Okay.
And so before I started going out there with him, he had went with a buddy of his. And there was only one time that he ever had something strange happen to him, and it was they were walking down this trail, and he had his dog, and the dog stopped. And it just was froze. Wouldn't move at all. And the smell just came out of nowhere, and he said it was just putrid. And so they had to, like, really coax the dog and almost pick him up to keep him going. And then when they had, because they were going fishing, and they went and fished for the day, and then when they came back, they had no problems with that spot. Well, fast forward a couple years, and we're down there camping with his buddies. And I decided to leave and go up to the truck because we were sleeping in the truck and they were sleeping in a tent down by the river. And I was sitting in the truck and, you know, I was used to the area, so I don't normally get spooked, you know. But that night I was terrified. For some reason, I just felt like I was being stared at. I ended up putting, like, blankets and stuff up so that if there was anything staring at me or any person, then they couldn't see me. I tried to go to sleep, and later on, my husband came up to the truck. He's just kind of standing there, and he's kind of, like, you know, looking back. And then he kind of just jumps in the truck really quick, and I'm like, what's wrong? And he didn't want to tell me at first. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, well, you have to tell me. You can't act like that and not tell me. And he's like, well, he said he saw this thing that it was like white, whitish gray, but it was like 4 foot high and 5 foot long. And the way that it moved, it was like it just glided. And he was struck with fear, and that's why he jumped in the truck and he didn't want to tell me about it. And we never got out and didn't look or anything. And I didn't know if that could have been a bear or what. But we were both just, you know, scared that night. So
did he say if it was on all fours or on two legs?
All fours.
What's the coloring doesn't sound like a bear in that part of the country, but I mean anything is possible.
Right. Well, and then anything being 4 foot tall and 5 foot long?
Well, it could very well be one of these things.
I know. Are you the Jennifer that had the question about being watched?
Maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. I've asked a ton of questions on Facebook. I'm Jennifer Garrett.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. No, I thought it was a good question. It's hard to say about your encounter. I mean, if it was a bear it's just hard to say. I don't think there's enough information there. I guess, you know, that feeling of being watched, I know that was one question I was going to bring up tonight. A lot of people report that feeling of being watched in the sense of being watched, especially in these type of situations. And Will, did you want to address that a little bit?
You know, it's one of those things they really don't know a great deal about, at least in psychological terms. You know, almost everybody says from, you know, one time or another, they've had that feeling, but, psychologists have yet to really pin that down, you know, what that source is. I think in a lot of cases it might be pheromones, you know, triggering some kind of response, but at this point, from what I've read, that's the closest thing they can come to, you know, attaching that feeling to you know, the feeling of being watched.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a great question. It's almost like that. I think it's kind of a sense that we used to have at one time. This is just my theory. There's no scientific evidence for this, but I kind of think it's a sense that we used to have at one time, kind of a protective sense that is built into us. And I think we're so, you know, we got TV, we got our cell phones, we have so many things. I think we kind of lose sight of that. But when we're in situations like in the middle of the forest and you get that heavy sense of, hey, I'm being watched, I kind of think that you're, and not to step on what you just said, Will, I think it's kind of that sense kicking in, that protective sense that we used to have at one time.
And you hit that on the head pretty good. We get bombarded with so much stuff just in daily life, and maybe not necessarily, you know, with cell phones and things. I mean, that adds onto the heat, but we sort of insulate ourselves from too much stimulus coming into our brains. And like I've mentioned this before, you know, the professor I had, one of the psych courses I took, talked about, and she used the example of, you know, our brains will shut off after a very short amount of time. It's a matter of seconds, really. So our brains don't get overstimulated. It's even like wearing your clothes, that's a source of stimulation. It's actually a stress. It's a form of stress. Everybody thinks stress is bad. There's good stress. There's bad stress. There's all sorts of types of stress. And what that is sensory input. And if we got too much of it, if our brain stayed keyed on to every kind of sensory input we have, we'd sort of overload. So our brains will shut off to certain things. It's like when you put your socks on. That's the example she used. After, say, 10 or 15 seconds, your brain says, okay, that socks. I don't need to know that anymore. And it shuts off that stimulation. So I think with all the stuff we're bombarded by throughout the day, and just living in the kind of society we do, our brains sort of tune out to a lot of stuff. Now, if we went back to our natural state before any kind of civilization existed, when we were in our wild state, we were very in tune with a lot of our surroundings, especially being, you know, one of the top predators, hearing, seeing, all that stuff would have been very, very heightened compared to what we currently, you know, associate our senses with our abilities. So if you're out in the woods and it's quiet and there isn't so much stimulation, I think a lot of that, what we used to have, or, you know, what's still inside of us, but it's more latent these days, sort of kicks in, like Wes said. And I think that's where a lot of that comes in, is we key in a lot quicker on what our natural state is to things around us. Does that help?
Yes, it does. It does. It makes a lot more sense.
I was just going to say, if you wanted to try an experiment, go out sometimes and sort of just be out someplace where it's just really quiet, and mm-hmm. see how much better your hearing and other senses become.
Right. Okay, yeah, definitely. I'll have to do that.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank you. Have a great night.
You too. Yeah, no, well, you're right. It's especially, you know, when you've been out hunting, I've noticed that, you know, you've been out hunting and you've been out in the woods, let's say for 2 weeks. It's almost like your eyesight, your hearing, everything almost seems like it gets better the more you're out there. And I say better, I mean, you're more in tune with what's going on around you in those situations.
Yeah, exactly. I know when I was in the Army as a scout, we'd be out in the field for, you know, a couple of weeks or more. And after a very short time, you could get where you could hear other people from a long ways away. That's why, I mean, even the voices, you know, we're a very noisy creature, and you have to really discipline yourself to learn how to be quiet. You can smell people from a long ways away. There's just all your senses really get to a fine, sharp edge after a while.
Here's a question from Vicky from the forums on SasquatchChronicles.com. She said, there's a few questions. One, strangest place you've heard there's been a Bigfoot encounter?
I'd say West Texas. There's places like that I would have never thought they would take up residence, but recent events in the past couple of months definitely make me believe otherwise.
Yeah, that's a good point. I thought about that too. You know, it's so flat, and it's so, you know, like you hear about encounters like in, well, I realize not all in Nevada and Arizona is people who don't have never been there outside of the United States just think of that as one big huge desert area. And there is some green area there, but it kind of throws me a little bit when I hear a lot of encounters out that way. You wouldn't think they'd be out that way.
Right, in the Mojave Desert in Southern California, there's all kinds of strange places I would have never considered before, but, you know, we get some of these encounters now, and it's just, you know, you can't dismiss them because they're too solid.
Yeah. Right. Vicky's next question is, do you have any sort of theory or theories on why they watch children? You know, there's reports of Sasquatches watching children. Why do you think that they... seem to be focused on children?
It could be one of a couple of things. I mean, these guys, I used to say they were just plain nosy. And a lot of primates are. They're, you know, if they see something going on, and I used to tell friends, I'd say, well, it's got to be pretty boring living up in the woods, you know, when you see these crazy humans come in, they come and check you out. And a lot of times they do. They'll come in and just circle a camp. They'll watch you. And it might be just out of curiosity. It could be that, you know, now with kids, it's either curiosity or, like with a lot of predatory species, the young and the old are what they go after. Those are the easiest targets. So it could be one or both of those reasons.
Yeah, no, I agree. Her last question is, what's the best thing to do when you encounter a Bigfoot? Just like you stumble into an encounter.
I would say don't do anything that could be construed as aggressive behavior back. Now that could be including raising your arms or any sort of a gesture that a creature like that might take as threatening. I would either stand still or back away slowly. You know, you want to break that contact, get away from the things.
I know dog 15 or dogs 15. Wants to know, Wes, just a hunch, but did Bob Garrett work for the government tracking these animals? Something makes me believe he knows a lot more about the government side of things for the government to keep close tabs on him.
You know, that's a good question.
That is a good question. And our answer is no comment. No.
You know, Go ahead,
Will. No, you better go ahead.
I was just going to make a comment. I was wondering, somebody sent me an email, and it was a question I wanted to ask Kumbo, if we get him back, if the government had made any sort of overtures towards him or Bear like they have Bob.
That's a good question. I'd love to ask him that.
And
if you're out there, Kumbo, call back in.
Yeah, I had never thought about it until that person asked, and it's a very good question.
We'll be revisiting this Bob Garrett situation. There's a couple of things that we're trying to do before we talk about it more. But I don't want people to think, I know there was this huge uproar on episode 75. There is a lot more information, but there's a lot of things that I guess I need to know before I just say it out on the air. And that's kind of what we're trying to do. There's going to be follow-up on it. Just, you know, trust me on that. But, so there's other things that we're not going to leave everyone in the dark, but just now is not the right time, to say that. It's funny in the forums too. It looks like there's a couple people proposing marriage to Shannon.
Are we surprised?
It's too bad Shannon's not here to answer those.
Yeah.
Bill, you're on there. You had an encounter you wanted to share?
Well, I'm not sure if it was. It's been bothering me for about 3.5 years now. My grandparents have a property up in northern Missouri. It's about 40 acres. And we would go there during the summer as kids and hang out all summer, basically, and go back at Christmas time and get together with family. And so I've hunted that place and fished my whole life, know it pretty well. And about 3.5 years ago, we were there in August, and everybody was in the house doing what families do. And I walked out, it was probably, I don't know, 9-10 o'clock at night. And I walked out back and walked down to the gazebo, which kind of overlooks the little lake that they have. And sat there and had a cigarette. And I heard one knock, just a sharp knock. And it was like two by twos knocking together, just one time. And I just sat there and thought about it. You know, what could that possibly be? And I could tell where it was. It was down below the dam, and it's kind of a swampy area. And I just sat there thinking about it and wasn't real worried or anything. I was thinking, well, it's possible a stick fell and hit another stick just perfectly and made that sound, but it was just unusual. And after a while, I got this fear inside of me that I've never had. And it was pretty overwhelming. And I've deployed a couple of times, and I was in a bad motorcycle accident about 4 years ago and sliding down the highway. So I know fear, but that didn't even compare to this. It was like down in your soul, you're going to die if you don't move now. And so I started walking fast towards the house and got to the back door and put my hand on the door. And I was sweating and my heart was pounding and I was looking back. I didn't see anything, didn't hear anything. And I thought I would just stand there for a few more minutes until I went back inside. I didn't want people to see me like this. And I realized this was ridiculous. You know, I've hunted at night since I was a kid. I've never been afraid of the dark or anything like that. And I just told myself, you're being stupid. So I calmed down and turned around and went back out there and had another cigarette and probably got about halfway through it. And then I remembered I had this laser in my pocket, one of those green lasers. And it wasn't one you buy at Walmart. It was one you have to buy overseas. It's got a key on the back so that kids can't get a hold of it. It'll actually light stuff on fire. And I turned it on and shined it across the lake, and it reflected off the lake and stuff. And then I shined it down to that area, and it bounced off some water down there or something, because it looked like a lightsaber flying around. And something crashed down the hill. And I can't even explain. I know everything's louder at night. I get that. But this sounded like a Volkswagen bus on its side rolling down the hill. The trees were cracking and popping. And then it took off in the other direction slowly, but breaking trees and just crashing. And I mean, it's just run through my mind over and over and over what it could be. Me and a dozen guys couldn't make that kind of noise.
How long ago did that take place?
It was in August of 2011. I went back in the house that night, and I wasn't going down there right then, but I went back down there. I didn't tell anybody about it. Down there the next day, and the leaves were a mess. I didn't see any prints. I wasn't looking for prints, but, well, I was. I figured it had to be something down there, like, I don't know what, but I wasn't thinking Bigfoot, that's for sure. But there were trees cracked. They were broke above my head. And they were freshly broke because the greens were still alive. They weren't going to live for very long. But
how were they broken?
Just snapped, bent over.
90-degree breaks?
Yeah, One was drug actually halfway up the hill, so it was 10 feet away.
It was pulled out of the ground?
It wasn't pulled out of the ground. It was snapped off, and it broke right off.
Okay.
There were two or three of them that were snapped and just bent over, still attached, and one was...
How big around do you think the trees were?
The largest one, probably 5 inches.
Okay.
There's no way that me and a couple of guys could do that. No way. And I know there wasn't anybody down there. I know that for a fact.
The things, like with any animal in an area, you know, if you want to know what's there, you have to look for their sign and scat. And by that, that's territorial markings, droppings, footprints, feeding behaviors, that kind of stuff. So the snap trees is one of the territorial markers these guys do.
I never even considered that this Sasquatch could exist. But about 6 months ago, I started listening to your show. And all of a sudden, I started to remember two or three things that happened when I was a kid that I totally forgot about. Nothing huge, but a good friend of mine that lived near my grandparents, we'd always get together when I was there. One time we were fishing down there, and he started yelling at me, "I just saw a monkey." He said he saw a monkey with just the face in the bushes. And he looked away, and he looked back, and it was gone. And I made fun of him, and he got pretty mad at me, and I didn't want to argue with him, so I said, okay, well, must have escaped or something. But I forgot all about that. And another time I was squirrel hunting. I was probably 10, squirrel hunting with a pellet gun. And I would, you know, how you, if you're by yourself, you're just kind of sitting there for a while, and you let them start moving around. And something hit me in the back of the shoulder. And I didn't see anybody, of course. And maybe 5 minutes later, something hit the ground a couple of feet in front of me. And I could see where it hit. So I dug around and I picked it up, and it was a piece of white marble rock. And there's no rocks out in the land at all, except for in the driveway of my grandparents' house. And that's marble, marble rock. And wow. That was, yeah, that's probably 50, 70 yards away from the driveway.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is now. I was confused back then, didn't know what to think, but now, wow.
Huh. Yeah, especially your friend's encounter with the, you know, saying he saw a monkey.
That's pretty much a giveaway there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never thought about that until I started listening to your show about 6 months ago and started thinking that, God, it's sort of possible. And then I started to remember a couple of things.
Well, we appreciate you coming on, Bill. We appreciate you kind of sharing the your encounter and thanks for listening to you, by the way.
Oh yeah,
absolutely,
great show, great show. Wow, you guys' encounters really, really. To me, it's 90% of the evidence because I listen to your encounters and think to myself, God, they've got to be telling the truth.
Yeah, you know, you listen to a lot of encounters. I realize it's anecdotal evidence, but.
But the consistency.
The consistency. And yet the funny thing is, if you took a lot of these people and they went to court and said they saw a murder happen, they would be taken seriously. And, sure. But you take all these people and they're saying they're seeing the same thing out there. And I think it's starting to become more and more accepted. I think the more that this becomes legitimized, the more and more people will. Start to accept it. A lot of the fence setters will go, you know, maybe there is something going on out there.
Yeah. You know, the court analogy was a good one back when John Green and Rene DeHinden were first doing this in the 60s. That was the example that was used back in those times. They said, with the evidence that was collected at that time, in a court of law, there would have been a conviction. And yet, society chooses to look the other way.
Well, it's just kind of hard to believe. I mean, it really is, especially in the Midwest. You think, geez, when you go out deer hunting, that's all you see is orange. You know, how could something like that be out there all this time and not having a body? You know, it is hard to believe. I'm not quite sure if I believe it yet, but I'm three quarters of the way there, thanks to you guys and what happened to, you know, I can't say that was an encounter, but I sure can't explain it.
Yeah.
Nothing, no scenario that I run through my head explains what that could have been. Because it wasn't a herd of anything. I mean, a deer with a snapped leg couldn't make anywhere near that noise. Even if it was a bear couldn't make that much noise.
Yeah, it sounded like a truck driving out of there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I've bought that property from them, so I'll be moving in a few months. So,
oh, nice.
Keep your eyes open.
Yeah, I sure will. Well,
thanks again, Bill.
I appreciate it. Okay.
Have a great night.
You too.
You know, I'll bring, we have Avis coming up next. She has a question. I wanted to ask this question. It's from SO in our forum. SO says, I'm curious what your thoughts are concerning all the different governments throughout the world and how or why they would all be keeping this secret together. Why hasn't some other countries' governments come out and acknowledge their existence?
You know, that's a good point, because like with the subject of UFOs, for instance, some countries have come out with information, and I think there's even a couple that have said, yeah, you know, we've been working on this. But with this subject, there isn't any. And it sort of makes me wonder about that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, too. You know, on tomorrow night, I'm going to be playing a pretty good encounter from a guy who was in the British military, and he went to India to do altitude. He was testing altitude sickness when he was there. And he ran into, I guess you'd consider it a Yeti out there, but he ran into one of these things. And he was kind of describing as he's going through, I mean, the guy has a really good description on what he saw. But their government out there is a little bit more lenient, and people are a lot more accepting as far as, and he had noticed that people were pretty open about talking about these things and a little bit more accepting than, let's say, out in the UK or here in the United States. He still didn't want to talk about it because he's doing altitude sickness testing and training for the military. And the last thing he wants to talk about is this thing he ran into. So it's been years and years and years, and he finally comes out. But, you know, a lot of these other countries, they are a little bit more open. I don't think the technology's there, like, and the communication like we have, but they are a little bit more open about it.
Yeah, with this subject, though, I mean, for whatever reason, and we have really at this point no idea why, you know, that our folks are keeping a lid on it. And as I said before, it could very well be a really, really good reason. We just don't know. And I guess it would be different if every country had as much clout as the others. But, you know, some like ours have a lot of clout. And, you know, if the reason's strong enough, they could certainly convince other governments to keep a lid on it there, too.
Avis, like Avis the Rent-A-Car, you had a question.
Yeah.
Still laughing about that. How are you tonight?
I'm okay so far. How about you guys?
Good. What's your question?
My question is, some of the witnesses have spoke about they would be walking in the woods and everything would go dead silent. No frogs, no crickets, no nothing. My question is, does everybody experience this right before they have a sighting, or they know something's in the territory? That's one of the questions. I do have another if possible.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sometimes it does happen. People usually don't realize it before an encounter. Most often, sometimes they do. I've been in the woods plenty of times when, you know, things went dead silent. I don't know what was there that caused that. I can't say it's Bigfoot because I didn't see anything, but does that mean it isn't? No. You know, a lot of times when a lot of different kinds of predators are in the area, some animals like squirrels and birds and things will usually, you know, ring the distress call. And then everything goes silent. So it's really hard to tell. I mean, it could be one of these things, could be anything.
And second question, you ready?
Sure.
Okay. There was one episode you guys had where the biker was going up the mountain and he come down and the infrasound hit him and he started taking his clothes off.
Right.
Has anybody else reported that they saw Bigfoot while this was going on, or if they had the sighting of it? Because what I'm wondering if there's another predator that we're not aware of that's even maybe mimicking the Bigfoot we are not aware of. Am I making any sense here?
Yeah, I think there was one or two other accounts that were similar to that one. And as far as another predator, it's possible. I don't know. I mean, there's very little known about infrasound currently, mm-hmm. So... you know, that question's definitely an open one, so it's a big unknown right now.
Well, that's what I was looking at David Pauly's books, and that was one of the things, you know, where they've stripped off clothes and everything like that. It seems to be a mixture of things going on in his books, and so you guys have opened my eyes up to quite a bit of stuff going on. I've been in the woods, and where everything goes dead silent. My butt's out of there like yesterday. I don't stay around for that mess. I'm gone.
It's a good precaution.
And I'm out. And it's happened 3 or 4 times, but I've never stood around looking for anything. But then hearing you guys, there was probably a good reason I did that, you know. And I was just wondering, you know, I'm just trying to connect the dots or see if there's any dots that need to stop and then not connect it to the other.
Listen to your instincts and watch for sign and scat. Sign and scat, of course, like I had mentioned before, was, you know, feeding behaviors, territorial markings, footprints,
right.
You know, all that kind of stuff.
All right, guys, I appreciate y'all's time, and y'all have a good night.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You know, that's a good question about that she had, you know, has anyone actually seen a Sasquatch do that with that reported behavior of people taking their clothes off? And it would sound strange. I know David Pilates goes into some of that in his books, people found without their shoes and without their, it makes you wonder if it's infrasound or what is actually going on there? What would cause people to take their clothes off?
And the thing is there a direct connection with a Sasquatch in that behavior?
Yeah. Starting to run short on time. I know Renee B wants to know, hey, Wes, I have a question of the utmost importance. Why do you wear sunglasses indoors? And what she's referring
to. You never know whether it's looking at you or not. Sorry, man.
Wow. Just bent over right there. No, it's a
I couldn't resist.
No, what Renee's referring to for other people who haven't been to SasquatchChronicles.com, we will do these videos from time to time, and I'll have my shades on. And I guess my answer to that is why not?
Why not
have your shades on?
didn't we do one of those where all three of us had our sunglasses on?
Yeah, I think there was one up there with that. And we'll be doing more of those on the website. And I'll probably even turn... We had so much response. I want to thank everyone on the website for submitting all the questions. And I'm definitely not going to be able to get to them, but I'll be posting. We'll be answering those with Shannon through a video on the website. We'll be answering a lot of your questions. But if you're on the website, I asked for questions from members. So please go on there, submit your question. This one's from Jennifer. I have a question for Will. Could you please update us on the burial mounds you believe you came across? Are you planning to go back up there? I'd love to hear an update about that. Thanks. You know, one thing I'll say before you jump on there, Will, is we were trying to get funding to have a lot of the listeners go out there and come with us to take a look at these. The funding just didn't happen, but it's something we're still definitely looking into. But go ahead, Will, if you want to answer her question.
We're definitely planning on going back to those places. Hopefully this summer. A lot of those locations, we can't get in there until after the snow's gone, you know, in the higher altitudes. But as soon as we're able to do that, we'll be up there and we'll have some video and things of those places.
Question from Tim S. Alaska is still home to at least 30,000 grizzly bears. Any idea how many Bigfoots are in Alaska?
Oh, God. I don't know. We want to get Rob Alley on. And for those who don't know Rob, he's the author of Rain Coast Sasquatch. And Rob, I think, could give us a much better answer on Alaska.
Yeah. No, I can't wait to have him on. I love his stories. I love that book he wrote. It's fantastic.
And Rob's a really great guy, too. Everybody will love to hear him.
Man, some of these usernames, I can't figure out what they... how to pronounce some of them. This one says, I was just wondering, is there or has there been any follow-up with the family from the Siege of Honabi? Are they still having the issues? Did they say?
Well, they don't have the property anymore. They lost the property, but Mike still goes up there occasionally. There's some cabins nearby that property, and he stays there. And they even come down to the cabins, he said. So he is still involved in that, but I don't know what's going on currently.
I know James G wants to know, Wes, Will, or Kumbo, this must be a new one. Have you ever interviewed someone that was attacked physically by a Sasquatch and survived?
I don't know about attacked. I mean, I had a buddy when we were teenagers who was grabbed and pulled halfway out of the tent by one.
Yeah.
But that wasn't, I don't think that was intentional.
Well, and then the kid that said he got thrown off the bike with a, from a gorilla.
Right.
I think that was more or less an attack on the bike, but.
And I will comment though, there was, and for those who've seen the movie, The Legend of Boggy Creek, if they recall the family who was sitting in the house and the one reached through the window and then the men went outside to see what it was with their guns and one of the guys was mauled. I know somebody who knows that person, the person who was actually attacked. And what happened was the thing was actually still on the porch when the men went out and it was behind him. So it grabbed him and threw him on the ground and was on top of him in a second. And what happened was it actually, if you've seen films of chimps hitting the ground with the backs of their hands really fast, that's what was happening to that guy. It just beat the hell out of him. And, you know, he was beat up pretty good and I think had a couple of broken ribs before the other men got there and chased it off. But, and I'd hope to get this guy on the show, but he won't talk to anybody about it. So that is one incident where I do know a man was attacked directly by one. And I don't know if it was trying to hurt him or just trying to sort of put him in his place. You know, reached through the window and they slapped its hand. And these guys, as everyone knows, has a pretty short temper, so I think they pissed it off.
Yeah, I know there was one where Woody and I, when we very first started the show, we talked to this guy. We ran into him. He had listened to the show, and he was telling us about his grandfather that owned a piece of property out in Camas, Washington. Now, Camas, if you're unfamiliar with the area, it's just east of Portland, Oregon. It's on the opposite side of the Columbia River. And this had happened on the Washington side, yeah. And this had happened back in the 60s, I want to say mid 60s. And his grandfather was out on the farm and he had noticed this guy was coming up. The guy was bloodied. He had looked like he had just taken a beating. And he was coming to his grandfather's. He was walking towards the farm. He was trying to get help. And back then, I don't think there was any 911 or there, you know, you would have to drive him down to the hospital. But what he had told his grandfather was he was attacked by a monkey in the forest. And he said that he thought it was either a monkey or a gorilla. And it had come out of nowhere and attacked this guy. And he had like a broken nose. He had like three broken ribs. And the guy was in pretty bad shape. But it's just kind of an odd part of the story to say a monkey attacked him or a gorilla. He said it was either a monkey or a gorilla. And we don't have monkeys or gorillas here out in Washington, but...
It must have been a relatively younger one.
It must have for him to be able to get away, but that's what he described it as.
And the size description.
Yeah. I know Dan M. In the forums wants to know, is it true Bob Garrett has gone underground? I wouldn't say Bob's really gone underground. I don't think he's going to be as public as he has been in the past. Definitely more to that coming. Willow Whispers wants to know, a question for Will. What is your feeling on the breeding? Do males travel miles? I would think there would be issues with interbreeding if these animals did travel or did not travel for breeding purposes.
I think, well, they cover a lot of distance anyway, just in their normal movements. And I'll use the up on the Browns property for a good example. There are at least a couple of groups there, probably three or more. And there's also a few rogue males that have their own group that sort of come around, you know, you said every couple of months, Wes. They are probably males out looking for females. So I'm sure they travel from group to group when they're in that situation trying to find females to start their own groups with.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough question. I mean, it's a valid question. It's a very tough question to...
It's something that's very little. There's little known about a lot of their behavior. So breeding is definitely one of those that's very, very little known about.
Yeah. there's an old Native American up towards the Browns property that has given a lot of insight to that area, to John and Sarah. And I'm working on getting him on the show. But there's a lot of things that he correlated, you know, when we were talking with our insider on areas that they were using as corridors up there to get to certain areas. He had correlated a lot of what the insider was saying on where kind of where they go. And one thing I thought was fascinating that this Native American was saying was they seem to congregate in an area for a short period of time. And I don't know if it was once a year. I can't wait to have him on to have him talk about that. But he's saying they kind of congregate in one area and then they kind of disperse off into different groups. You know, whether that's true or not, I guess it's hard to say, but makes you wonder why they would kind of congregate in one area.
There was an old story in the eastern Skamania County that I came across back in the 80s, and I don't know how valid it is, but it was a very similar type of thing where, as the story went, it claimed that these things would get together once a year in this area. And the old timer I heard it from, I think, embellished a little bit on it because he said, well, they were having Bigfoot Olympics and they were wrestling and things. So, with a lot of things you hear, there's usually a kernel of truth to them. So what that gentleman said about them congregating in one particular area once a year matched this one also. And it could be for, you know, could be for breeding purposes or things like that. It's really difficult to tell.
I guess the last one we'll try and touch on, and then we'll get out of here, is I know Michael Harrison was wanting to know. He's wanting to know what updates there are for the website. I guess this is something we could talk about for a moment. It's not really Bigfoot related, but he wanted to know if we're going to be doing private messaging between members and during show times, breakdown in the forums into subcategories, video picture section, you know, for the all one-stop shop on everything Bigfoot. And that's something that we're working on. A lot of things that he had brought up. And there's one other thing I wanted to mention to people, because this is a question I get all the time. People are wanting to know if they can download, like just for the members, you know, we do the member shows, and we're working on that. We're also working on a podcast player that'll intertie with the website. The only downside to that is all that costs money. And so we're trying to utilize all our resources to make the website better. But be patient with us. Everything doesn't happen overnight. I would like to get the breakdown in the forums and the subcategories and a lot of these other things.
I guess the thing people don't understand is the website's in its infancy. Now, even though it's a great website and there's a lot up there, it's just the very, very beginning step. There's a lot more planned, a lot more coming. We just hope everybody's patient and we'll kind of hang in there till these things get added.
There's a question from Vicky again. What does Mr. Black say about what's happening to Bob Garrett? Did he advise on what Bob can do?
He said that he told me that before all the things that are happening was going to happen. So what he predicted was right on the money.
Yeah, there's a lot of different tools that they utilize. I guess one would be like an IRS audit that Mr. Black was talking about, just different tools that they will right. utilize.
There's almost a progression to things that they will do.
Yeah. And I promise everyone there'll be more on the Bob Garrett thing. We're not trying to hide anything from anyone. We're not trying to be shady about it. There's a lot of things that I'll publicly come out and talk about, some of the things that have bothered me a lot, but there's different things that I want to verify and different things that I want to have all my ducks in a row before we do it. And I want to make sure Bob's safe and all that other stuff, you know, instead of just blurting things out. So that's pretty much vague, isn't it? As vague as possible.
Well, you know.
I know one guy, he was asking, and it was a good question. I was just looking for it. And we talked about the different types. And he was saying that what throws him off is that some people describe this human-looking face. Yet.
Okay. I wanted to hit on that when Kunbo kind of was jumping in there. I wanted to clarify that a little bit more, because this goes back to when Bobby Short, who was a friend of mine, and I would used to talk about our individual encounters. And her encounter, my encounter, described what we saw was completely different. And I could never reconcile that. And I knew she was being very straightforward. That was kind of gal she was. And being a good friend, I didn't want to argue with her, so I didn't. But I always kept in the back of my mind wondering, how is it that what she saw, she said the face looked human. The rest of it looked Sasquatch, the face looked human. And what I saw was not human at all. Well, when Mr. Black told me was that the type 4 has a very human looking face. It's not, doesn't have hair on it, but the rest of the body does. It looks like a Sasquatch. So and people have to understand, you know, we get a lot of discrepancies in some of these accounts from one to another in description. And it's because most people really haven't keyed in on the fact that there are 4 different types. And if you can figure out which type, and it's pretty simple, some of these details like the type 1 and 4s are in the same major grouping, the same species grouping. They don't have canines. The type 1, the Patterson type, you know, you look at the film, there it is. That's the type 1. The type 4 is similar. It's a little smaller. It's still a big creature, but it's not as big as the other 3 types. And the proportions, the arms and legs and things, are a little more close to human type proportions. So I think if you were to describe the type 4, you know, maybe the traditional Neanderthal look might be closest to that. And I think that's how people, when they say, well, it looked human, they're either seeing a type 4 or that's just what's in their vocabulary. That's the closest thing they can come to describing what it is they saw.
No, and I'm glad you brought that up. I know that Tom Cantwell has 2 questions, and I'll answer the first question, and I'll let you answer the second question. How many have been killed, captured in Texas that you know of? Is there an honest effort to manage them? Does that effort include reducing their numbers when the situation permits? I guess to answer that question, yes. The second part of the question is also, do you think that they're prone to retaliation? Does removing one put people in more danger, in a more dangerous environment?
Yeah, I think if you're going to, well, if the teams go in and remove one, you know, they're pretty well armed. So we don't know exactly yet what's happened during some of those encounters, whether they've had to kill the whole group or not. I would say they probably have, because like with humans, and I'm sure other primate species, you know, if they're attacked, one member is attacked by something, you know, then certainly the alpha male and the sub males, you know, in that hierarchy are going to take some action back, some kind of retaliatory action. And I would think with these things, especially because they're not really an ape, they're a little bit more closer to what we are, not saying they're human. They're just a little closer to us than they are apes. So they've more than likely, and it's based on behaviors with a lot of these accounts, have short tempers and seem to be vindictive. So I would say absolutely they'd take retaliatory measures.
William C. wants to know, Will, question, do you think folks going out looking for any signs should use drones with thermal cameras instead of infrared cams, as some postulated that Bigfoot can see in the infrared spectrum?
You could try it. It'd be kind of a shot in the dark, but, you know, my deal is still, you know, if you want to know where one is, you got to look for the sign. You got to know what sort of wildlife's in the area. And these guys leave the same kind of stuff behind as any other wildlife. You know, you can send a drone up with cameras on it, and it's sort of like the Falcon Project, you know, good luck finding something. But I, you know, the infrared, yeah, my information is that they can see that light spectrum. So, which is one of the reasons that trail cams and things like that don't work. So if you can use something, some technology other than, what has the infrared spectrum, then I would say give that a shot.
Well, I think that's, everything. There's more questions in here. Yeah, we're about out of time. I know there's more questions in here, and we'll definitely post those to the website, SasquatchChronicles.com. Thanks for being here, Will. I know it's Saturday. Who, just off the record, who you voting for tomorrow, the Hawks or the Patriots?
Well, being from a Puget Sound area, I guess I have to say the Hawks.
Yeah, I know it's going to be a good game. But we'll be posting, there'll be a few interviews that we'll be posting tomorrow on the website too as well, along with this one. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. I want to thank Kumbo for calling in and everyone who called in with questions or their encounters. And thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see everyone next week.